Thank you for listening to Stoop Kids, a Hey Arnold podcast. I actually brought along a map to help me get through this episode, and so far, so good. I'm Cody Narveson, and you can find me on Twitter at Cody_BH.
And I'm Emily Suey. You can find me on Instagram at Emily Suey.
Also with us today is the Beeper King of Minneapolis, Jason Daphnis, who you can find on Twitter at Nintendoofus. You can also keep up with the podcast on Twitter and Instagram at StoopKidsPod. And if you act now, for no extra charge, kids will be spelled with a Z. Also with us today is a very special guest. She's an editor over at The Daily Beast, though you may know her work through previous roles at Slate, Vox, and or Polygon. Please welcome to the show, Allegra Frank. Allegra, how are you doing today?
I'm okay. I'm sweating buckets. It's August right now, and it is the worst weather time of the year. I hate it, but we're almost done. And I am looking forward to being slightly less sweaty every single day.
Hey, aren't we all? That's, wow. Yeah, brighter pastures ahead for sure. I guess before we hop in, I'm curious to get a sense of, you know, kind of what your mileage is with Hey Arnold. You know, something you grew up with, or if you're like us, maybe the last few years allowed you to sort of jump back in and, you know, recontextualize or bask in the nostalgia. What's your history with the show kind of been like, if you don't mind?
I definitely, you know, watched it from the time I can remember. It's been on, or it came out, you know, when I was really young, probably like 3 or something. So I don't really remember a time before Hey Arnold. And as a big cartoon watcher as a kid, I definitely watched a ton of it. We were a big Nickelodeon and Cartoon Network household. And Hey Arnold was one of our favorites, not just because it's just like this fun show about, you know, kids and their misadventures, which was always just delightful to watch as a child, but also my parents found it fun to watch. Like, they weren't, you know, the kinds of people who were like, oh, this is so annoying, we're not letting you watch this, turn it off or whatever. And they basically let us watch whatever we wanted, whenever we wanted, which maybe was problematic in its own way, but they definitely liked the vibe and the aesthetic of Hey Arnold. So if that was on, they kind of would like do a double take and kind of be like, oh, we like this show. It has this cool soundtrack, this cool vibe. The characters are so idiosyncratic. So it was a Frank family household fave. And that always made it a little extra special. And watching it, you know, as I was older, I continued to watch it. I've always watched cartoons. I never really stopped. And that was always a fun one to go back to because there were so many layers and so many different ways to see the different characters, both the kids and the adults. And it's definitely something, you know, if it was on a rerun and I was home as a 22-year-old from college, I would still put it on. And with Paramount Plus these days, I regularly just kind of not sponsor of this podcast yet, but I definitely still kind of throw it on in the background sometimes when I'm bored. So definitely, it's always been one of my favorites.
Dang, that, wow, that's awesome. It sounds like, not to, I don't know, put my foot on the scale, it sounds like you have the optimal perspective to come into this with. Also, Paramount Plus, you know you're listening, shell us some dollars. But yeah, I guess may as well hop in here. We are, of course, today talking about episode 65 of Hey Arnold. And for those of you keeping track at home, because we know you're out there, that is season 4, episode 5, going by production code order. I'm going to start with episode A, which is, of course, called The Beeper Queen. Original air date, March 29th, 1999. The Wikipedia-sanctioned episode summary is as follows. After Bob pops his spine, Miriam runs Big Bob's Beepers. At first, the job turns her into an attentive mother, packing lunches for Helga, driving her to school, and helping her with her homework. She soon gets in over her head and forgets about her family, and Helga must help her come to her senses. And as we always do on this show, shouting out the fine folks who made this episode possible. Frank Weiss directed this one, and Michelle Lamoureux got the writing credit. So I guess in absence of our dear friend and co-host, Terry, unable to make it today, Emily, I will entrust you with the reins of leading us with your takes fearlessly into episode 65. Emily, what did you think about the Beeper Queen?
Yeah, thanks for asking, Cody. I'll try to take this one for both me and Harry then. But yeah, I wrote down as like a summary, this episode's basically the one where Miriam becomes a Beeper Emporium girl boss. And yeah, I think we've talked about Miriam's character before, and especially in Road Trip, where it was just the mother-daughter journey between her and Helga, and you actually see Miriam doing stuff, as we kind of summarize that one, for the first time, because she's usually more kept in the house or just like doing stuff in the kitchen, and you don't see her really outside of the Pataki household much in this series. But this one's a big deal because she gains so much independence and confidence, and she's got all this respect from the people at work and in her family, especially from Helga, which is huge here. So like just to see their mother-daughter relationship change through those changes of Miriam's, I think is a really big deal. And this episode especially is like very emotional because of that, because they have such a challenging relationship as we've seen in the series. Just to see Helga like talking up her mom at lunch to her best friend Phoebe and being like, yeah, can you believe Miriam packed this awesome lunch and she's doing big things and she's so proud of her mom and is spending more time with her in the bedroom and like doing her homework with while Miriam works on beeper things, beeper business stuff. I think the music too is super good in this one because there's the scene I'm talking about where everything switches around, like the time scales shift because Helga and her are spending so much time together. Things are great. She's making moves, and you have the music that's like, ba ba ba. It's like, big things are happening, woohoo! Like, she's being a boss. And then you see her becoming more and more like wrapped up in work and preoccupied, and she starts to become like a workaholic a bit. So is spending less time with Helga, won't wave to her when she drops her off. And the music in that whole scene then shifts to like this dissonant, scattered jazz. Because you see they're just becoming more, spread apart by the pulls, I guess, the stress of the Beeper Emporium workload. But yeah, I think this is such a good episode. What else did I want to say about it? I have a lot of notes on it. I really like the animation too, where Helga's on the bridge with Arnold, and of course he's lending her an ear so she can talk about what's going on between her and her mom. And she's got the chocolate ice cream cone and she's just like going off about everything that's happening to him. And you don't see him because she's just like stressed and talking in a Helga way. And then it cuts back to him and he's covered in the chocolate ice cream because, yeah, obviously she's having a rough time dealing with all those changes. But yeah, also beepers really are a girl's best friend, I think. I think that commercial is super funny at the end. Yeah, this episode like balances a lot of like emotional stuff with the mother-daughter strained relationship becoming better and then becoming worse and then kind of like making amends at the end with some sprinkles of humor to keep things moving because it is kind of a heavy one, I think, overall. But yeah, I want to hear what y'all think.
Dang. Yeah. Great. Comprehensive. That's... But yeah, you said a lot of the things that hit me about this episode as well. I'm excited to dig into this more. Allegra, what did you think about Miriam, the titular Beeper Queen?
I will just say every time I watch this show, like with the passing of time, the fact that beepers were so crucial to like everything. Like the Pataki family dynasty solely being based upon beepers is always like increasingly weird, you know, like I feel like I barely knew what a beeper was. And when I was watching this, because I was so young and no one knows what a beeper is now. Like I barely remember what beepers look like. So watching this today, I was like, oh my God, throw me back, honey. Other than that, though, I really love this episode, but also it is one that gets sadder and darker to me every time I see it. Like Emily, as you said, we see Miriam being this beeper queen girl boss, but just like in, you know, as you mentioned, like Road Trip or in general, anytime we see Miriam kind of have a win or some kind of development, the show has to roll it back because that's how cartoons work. Status quo is very important. And Miriam can't just go be in charge of the, you know, the big Bob's beepers empire. It's just not how things are going to work going forward. But to see her go from, you know, really self-actualized and ambitious instead of this coded alcoholic mom staying at home on the couch and being a terrible parent, you know, we to see her then revert back is really depressing. I was like reading Reddit, just like seeing if people had thoughts on the episodes before this. And there was a thread that was like, is it just me or is this the most depressing episode of the show? And I don't know if I agree with that, but it is really dark if you think about it. Like by the end, yes, Helga wants her mom back and totally get that. Like we see Miriam just goes to the extreme end of everything. So the scene where she yells at Helga to get offset is really sad. But it's also just depressing to see her finally make something of herself and then completely go back to where she was, which was not much. And Helga's not going to be much nicer to her and not going to appreciate her as much as she acts as though she does at the end. And it is hard to watch. It was a little hard to watch, even though I knew it was coming. I was still disappointed at the end seeing that development.
For sure. Two quick things based off notes that you said, Allegra, that I want to get out there before I forget. The fact that Helga has that moment in the episode where she's like, oh, Bob, what are you going to do? You got to go sell beepers at your beeper emporium. It's like Helga has never been that invested in her family's like financial dynasty before. That was extremely funny. This being the saddest episode is kind of fascinating. I mean, student teacher is fresh in at least my head, because we talked about it a couple weeks ago, an Olga episode where Helga eventually sends her off to Alaska, just like an extremely, extremely bummer episode. Also, Pigeon Man was very sad. That may have had to do with the fact that we recorded that on 420 and we're very in our feelings for other reasons. But, one thing that both of you kind of touched on that I felt as well is that, you know, Miriam is not a character on the show that gets like a ton of momentum. You know, it's things getting rolled back all the time. There's that great Road Trip episode that we don't really, you know, call back to in any way. Miriam is, we're just kind of starting from square one. And there are even some bits of that sort of that feeling in this episode where like Miriam has that meeting, that initial meeting, and we don't see what happens. She just kind of talks about it. And that sort of bummed me out. Just like seeing Miriam in action would have been maybe a nice, a nice gentle nudge toward her character. And then one thing that also sort of, that bummed me out at first, and maybe just because I didn't get to see that business meeting where Miriam like came in clutch. Having us kind of speed through in like a montage sort of way, her interacting with Helga and things getting progressively worse between them as Miriam becomes more and more of a hashtag girl boss. But then I quickly came to my senses and thought, well, this is literally just that, from that Tentacle Lickers episode of SpongeBob where Squidward runs through the motions and there's that montage of him and it eventually shows him getting sadder and sadder. And then I realized that's just effective storytelling. And I know Jason is on mute and off camera right now, but he is, I bet, having a good laugh in the background, hopefully. I don't know. Having the nice sort of threads between Helga and Miriam, like one thing I did genuinely love about this episode, and I don't know how y'all feel about this, but you know, the fact that Helga reached the crux of her arc by really just like vocalizing how she felt about the situation, which she did to Arnold, and, you know, waving around an ice cream cone, you know, that sort of gag hampers that moment a little, but like she, you know, realizes her feelings, and she, makes them, you know, she speaks them aloud, and she doesn't get the chance to speak them aloud to Miriam, but Miriam also figures out kind of her, you know, what she needs to do on her own. They come to those points independently, and then at the end, they can come together in a nice way and just be like, hey, we've figured each other out here. I don't know how did that moment feel between y'all? Did the ending, and I mean, maybe it sounds like the people on Reddit had good thoughts about, you know, why this was such a bummer. Maybe the final notes of this episode lend it to that, but I don't know. Did that land for y'all, or am I off my rocker here?
I'm curious to hear from Emily on this, but I agree with you, Cody, in that there's something special about seeing Helga actually voice her feelings. It's something that she is terrible at, notoriously, like to other people. She's very good at talking about her feelings to herself, but she can't confront anyone about how she feels about them or the situation in an honest way. Like, so for her to be able to even say that to Arnold is pretty powerful. And then to go and say it to her mom, who she doesn't have a great relationship with, and generally she and her dad are kind of verbally abusive toward her mom. Whenever we see Helga kind of do the mature thing there, it is sort of special. And her having that moment with Miriam, and Miriam really feeling that, and them showing the love they have for each other. You know, Miriam is a good mom in a lot of senses. She just also has a lot of problems that hamper her ability to mother. But it was sweet to see Helga actually want to fortify that relationship with her mom and using her words to do so.
Yeah, I agree with both of y'all. Cody, I'm glad you pointed that out, because I hadn't really thought about them separately coming to that conclusion. Like, Helga does kind of the best she can, sort of coming to her mom and saying like, hey, mom, what's up? Like, I miss you. What's going on? Sort of. But she doesn't verbalize anything that she had said to Arnold about like every which way she feels about this and how she's like proud of her mom and all of that too. She doesn't like go through the whole spiel again. She just kind of does what she can to be like, hey, mom, like, I'm over here. Can't you see me? I miss you. And so it's kind of nice that they came to that conclusion that there was that big separation between them independently. Kind of makes it more of a, I don't know, a sweeter conclusion, even though, to Allegra's point too, Miriam then goes back to just kind of how things were at the very end. And you probably lose the thread of that bond being like further solidified. So I don't know, but that is cool that I hadn't thought about the writers writing their own separate conclusions like that.
Yeah. And we think about, you know, things, quote unquote, you know, going back to normal or like reverting back to, I don't know, the roles that they were in. Like, eventually the show will roll this back, and we probably won't see the fruits of Miriam's labor in this stretch of, you know, being in the active workforce, the workforce of beepers. But like, it's I guess a little fascinating to me in retrospect that, you know, the show just didn't go, I don't know if it would have been the easier route, but just like having Miriam and Bob switch roles, you know, like to where, you know, Bob is maybe coded as like the drunken stay-at-home father. Like, he goes in a like kind of a different direction. It's like an unofficial tradition on the show to like reference movies in like an extremely shoehorned fashion. And I couldn't help but think of James Stewart in Rear Window watching Big Bob lie, you know, injured on the furniture and, you know, upset, especially in the first like third of the episode, that, you know, femininity is encroaching upon him. Femininity. I thought I snuck in one too many ends. But then, yeah, I don't know. He's watching soaps all day, and, you know, he doesn't want to go back to work. And yeah, I don't know. How did we feel about Big Bob in this? Like, Hitchcock, you know, homages notwithstanding. Like, was it like the right sort of spice, we think, for this episode, or did it feel a little sort of off? Was it like a guilty pleasure watching him writhe in pain on the couch? How did y'all feel about that?
I have to say, I'm not a Big Bob fan. I think Big Bob is a jerk, a D-bag. And we, you know, but he is an interesting character in that he does also show some caring parenting skills. And what I appreciated in this episode, more so than just like him sitting on the chair and watching TV and all of that, is when he first hurts himself early in the episode, and then he and Helga are freaking out about like, oh, who's gonna work? He and Helga are both saying the same like exclamations, like, you know, Helga always says criminy, and so first Bob is like screaming criminy and his back's hurting, and then Helga's screaming criminy, mom, you can't go to work, and there's the different things he was saying, like exclaiming, like mother cracker is one he says. It's very, very funny to me. So that scene in the beginning was worth it. But otherwise, the Big Bob stuff is just like always set dressing to me. He's either a villain or he's dressing. He bothers me. He's an annoying character to me. So I was like, whatever. I love the idea, though, that it is a Rear Window illusion that he's our Jimmy Stewart. But the TV is his apartment building, I guess. He's not having his own really fun side adventure here.
Man, I couldn't agree more with the Big Bob stuff, not being such a fan of his. He's such a bad parent usually in the show, so it's kind of hard to really root with him at times. But I did think it was funny that this episode immediately wrote him into like, after he scorns the soap opera thing and he's like, I'm not going to get into this. You know that, of course, he's going to immediately get into the soaps and be like screaming at the TV over whatever's going on. And what is it? A Days of Our Lives type of soap that he's watching with romance and what have you, weddings. But I was starting to feel a little bit just more down in the dumps as the episode progressed, because then he was just passed out a lot on the couch and Helga's like clearly needed just anyone to talk to, and especially at home between the two parents. So I don't know. It really drove home the point though of like the neglect and everything she was feeling, but it was hard to watch too, just as he got, you know, increasingly into the soaps.
Yeah, and I guess it's important for me to crawl out of the woodwork. I am a fan of Bob's presence because he's a big old caricature, and usually there is some sort of, he's being used as like an extreme foil for whether it's Grandpa or Arnold or whatever the case might be. Well recognized the positive and the many, many negative effects he's had on, for example, Helga's upbringing. I don't know, that's Big Bob canceled many times over. You know, whatever I hope he had fun on that recliner of his. Moving away from Big Bob, I guess, you know, any other, you know, lingering threads that y'all took away from this episode, shout outs, you know, like little quotes or moments that, you know, hit y'all in a certain way before we close out the first half of this?
Go ahead.
Oh, no, you go ahead, Emily.
Well, thank you. on the note of Big Bob, I thought it was cute that Miriam calls him B, which I don't think we've seen in the series before. And it's like, oh, she has a little pet name for him. That's kind of cute, even though they're, you know, not an ideal couple in any sense of the word.
Another monosyllabic name to call his or her monosyllabic husband, but that's okay. You know, it's a cute name. B is cute. Good for you, Miriam.
She calls him B a bunch in this episode, so it's like, okay, it was endearing to me after a while.
That is also funny. Like, his name is already a nickname.
Right. I really liked the way Miriam said, "I'll see you in court," in like the most chipper Miriam Pataki voice, like, you know, it wasn't any sort of argument. She's on the phone with in a business call, and I'll see you in court. Da 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 la 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 la. And then I guess one last shout out goes to how the city looks at night when Miriam drives over to Helga, and we see that same car that's in Road Trip. So it's like, oh, but now it's in the city at night, and you have like all the streetlights glowing and the multicolored apartment buildings all across them, like water tower. It just looked really nice to me, and I like that setting for their sweet conversation on the side of the street where the car door is like wide open too. She just runs right out to Helga. But yeah, that's it for my shout outs.
Something I think about a lot and continue to be obsessed with is the never realized spinoff, the Patakis. You guys, I'm sure you've talked about this one. Yeah. The Nick at Night proposed spinoff. And this is the kind of episode that I feel like would have fit so well into that. And I used to think back when I would troll the, Hey Arnold fan sites and learn about this kind of thing, I would think about what stories they would be able to tell on a show like that. And having this be, you know, a longer and deeper look into this fractured marriage and family and Miriam's likely alcoholism and how she falls back into that and how she's actually affected by going to work in this high pressure job and then leaving that quite quickly. I just wonder what could have been if they had a Patakis like platform for this story.
Well, Craig, we know you're listening. Make that happen. And one of the episodes needs to talk about how Miriam, for some reason, comes to us straight out of Fargo, which is my one shout out from this episode. Like, Miriam always kind of had a different voice going on. There are some sequences in this episode in particular where it felt like the Coens were directing her. But I'll leave that alone, mostly because I'm getting a notification. I pulled out a beeper just, you know, in honor of the episode. And it's just like an unhelpful text message, turns out. No wonder we left those in the 90s. But I'm going to figure out what this is all about. Do not touch that dial, though, because we'll be right back after the break. Welcome back to Stoop Kids, a Hey Arnold podcast. Next is episode 65B, which is called Oscar Can't Read, original air date March 29th, or excuse me, let me take that again because there's a question mark that I forgot to inflect upon. So episode 65B, which is called Oscar Can't Read, original air date March 29th, 1999. The Wikipedia-sanctioned episode summary is as follows. Arnold finds out that Oscar is illiterate and tries to teach him to read. The final test is to take Oscar to the other side of town, and he must find his way home with only a map and written directions. And there's a special Wikipedia note here, which they do on some of the episodes. The Wikipedia sanctioned special note for this episode is, and there's a cat. Really interesting for Wikipedia to slide in, but I guess they thought it was pretty important. So figured we'd call that out, as well as the fine folks who made this episode possible. Frank Weiss actually directed this episode as well. And the writer's credit goes to Joseph the Purdman Purdy, who we're seeing a lot of this season up to this point. So shout outs all around, and shout outs to Emily, who I'm going to start with for takes on this episode. Emily, what'd you think of this one?
Yeah, Oscar can't read. I also was tripped up by the question mark because I think Hulu probably lists it without, but then you see it in the actual title card. Anywho, this episode is excellent, I think. I'm really glad Allegra chose this one or pointed this out in the season. I think Oscar is historically just like a really aggravating character, really a difficult guy in the boarding house. He gets on everyone's nerves and is oftentimes just doing like the easiest thing, getting the easiest way out of any situation. So this like redemption arc of his is huge, and especially just like an amazing feat that at an older age, he's like a middle-aged guy, right? With presumably doesn't have English as his first language, and doesn't know how to read. So like all of his other personality traits as well, just like wanting to take the easy way out usually. He does such an amazing thing by like buckling down and learning how to read as a full grown adult. And not even that, but also navigating the city, the big city in parts that he's never been in, apparently, according to Arnold, navigating all of that by himself and getting back home at the end of the night. Like, I don't know. I was cheering him on, even though he's usually very, gets under my skin in a lot of other episodes of the show, this one is like, man, Oscar did it. This is a huge accomplishment for so many reasons. And I think it's really funny in a lot of ways too, but is heavy as well. I think both these episodes we're talking about are pretty heavy. But this one, we have obviously the humor of Pet the Kitty, the story that Oscar develops such affection for in learning how to read when he's sitting around at the library with the kids. Also, when he's on the street and he just got like kind of shut out of the boarding house, the guys were calling him a loser. It was really tough. He's having a hard time. And he walks out on the street by himself and walks into this little kid who the little kid looks like he's from an olden times cartoon or like an old comic book or something. Or even like, you know what I'm talking about? Like a, I don't know, an old snack at the baseball game or something.
Yeah, like he should be on stage in a production of Newsies or something like that.
He like doesn't quite even fit the look, but it's I think in a comical way. And he's going, "Can't you read, Mister? Can't you read?" And I cracked up at that. I thought it was so funny, even though also you're like, man, Oscar's having a rough go of it right now. But that scene made me laugh really, really hard. I wrote down he looks like he's out of Popeye or some shit. I don't know. But yeah, and then Oscar's walking down the street and you just see all of, from his perspective, what the signs look like, where it says like Raz instead of Jazz, and everything is abstract, all the words, and just looks like a bunch of symbols and shapes. So you're getting his perspective of like, how that would be so, so difficult to navigate a big city and just not know how to read, both of those things together. So I'm like really proud of him in this episode, which is surprising again, I think, just because of his character. But I think the episode 2 does a great job of like giving you that feeling of navigating a large city or an area you're not familiar with, like the anxiety and how alone you might feel if it seems like everyone around you knows where they're going and you don't. And on top of it, he can't read the signs or he's new to reading. And also like, so when he gets off at the wrong stop on the subway, because of that gag of the streets being like the same, or the towns being the same name almost, he sits down and he meets the kitty and he's kind of talking to himself. And I felt like, wow, this is a really good empathy builder too, because he sort of seems like in that moment, maybe someone you would see on the street who's talking to themselves, or, you know, finds a cat, or someone who looks lost, or maybe doesn't have a house or something in the city you'd run into. And I thought that was kind of a nice moment. I'm not sure if that was like their intention, the writer's intention, to make him kind of seem like that. But I was thinking about that a lot in that scene, and it just, I don't know. I really liked that and liked humanizing him more, just like building empathy for him and being able to cheer him on for a really incredible accomplishments. And then at the very end too, the scene of just Sunset Arms from above and all the boarders fighting because he's reading the Pet the Kitty story because he loves it so much. I just like, oh, the community in the city. Like, that's so sweet. Really, really excellent episode. So I can't wait to hear y'all's thoughts on it.
Yeah, and I guess for that, we pivot to the second cat owner on this episode. Allegra, what did you think about this episode?
My cat literally just walked over to me when you called on me. She's sitting in the background now. She wants to be the kitty that is Pet. So this is definitely one of my favorite episodes. I totally find it like, as you said, Emily, like there's a good deal of empathy here for a character that we very rarely feel that way toward. We very rarely have reason to like him. He is a freeloader. He's pretty terrible to Susie, who does everything for him. Literally, he's obnoxious to the other boarders. He isn't particularly smart. He doesn't have too much to offer. But I do like these little episodes that humanize him, or, you know, create more of a sympathetic character there. It's always interesting to see the show give these other shades to characters that can seem a little more black and white. And that's something that Hey Arnold is so good at. And there's just so many like iconic lines in this episode and that balance out the sort of inherent sadness of this Czech immigrant living in the big city, unable to read at the age of, you know, late 30s or whatever, and having hidden this as long as he's been in America, and how difficult his life must have been, and like just the implications there of, oh, maybe this is why he kind of sucks. Like, he has been hiding this incredibly difficult thing this whole time. You know, like, even watching as a little kid, I was like, I can't imagine not being able to read. Like, I could barely remember what it was like to not be able to read. So walking around and just not having that most basic intrinsic skill to survive, you know, especially as you said, in the city, was sort of like a scary proposition to me. But having him, you know, try and cheat his way through it at first is so memorable and funny, of him almost convincing everyone he's learned how to read the first chapter or page of War and Peace. The first page of A Tale of Two Cities. God, he probably was going to try memorizing War and Peace next, but the fact that he impressed everyone so much, but then they realize, oh, actually you just memorized that, is so funny. And then, you know, just the pet the kitty, I can never forget. Like, even today, I still say to my cat, like, pet, 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 I want to pet the kitty. Just talking to her like that. So there are some cute comic lines that are in keeping with Oscar being this comic relief, but then also it is just such an inherently kind of sad story with a happy ending. And it's nice to see them really tackle this difficult theme in a mature way that doesn't sacrifice the heart that the show is so good at having.
I totally agree. And I think you two, all of us sort of ended up in something of the same place. I didn't realize until I rewatched it again last night that this is an episode that I think about in pieces a lot. You know, just in Oscar's voice reading out, it was the best of times, it was the worst of, just my brain goes to that at random moments. That's sort of the MP3 loop that plays in my head sporadically. But there's a lot of heart here. There's a lot of attempts at, and like successful attempts at, creating empathy for this character who has routinely, historically on the show, been extremely frustrating to watch. And like, we've, as a humble podcast, we have not been particularly kind to Oscar in previous Oscar-centric episodes. You know, just we're a couple episodes into season four. Part of me thinks that might be, I mean, hopefully what we see more of these characters who maybe get an episode a season, and they take center stage here again. And they're, I mean, we had Olga a couple weeks ago, you know, and Oscar's very much the same, where they're kind of stuck in their ways, you know, by virtue of the narrative or just by virtue of who they are. They always we find themselves rolling themselves back, falling into the same habits. Olga, as much as he tries, is just never going to get it with connecting with Helga. Oscar, as much as he might claim he tries, or however much he actually tries, they do say in this episode he is still canonically a paperboy. So that is something that they brought forth from one of the recent Oscar-centric episodes. But, you know, the season four being like, no, we need to break the wheel a little bit. We need to, as Emily noted, we need to get perhaps a little bit heavy. We need to, you know, really like dig a little bit deeper. Let's try and create something new from these characters. You know, it's the, you know, Helga and Arnold and everybody else can see that they need a little bit, you know, the same old tricks aren't going to work. Like, we can't trick Oscar into, you know, wanting to be a better person. He's gotta want it. And, you know, his monologue in Arnold's room of, you know, I want to be able to pass, you know, my neighbor the salt. I want to be able to read this recipe for grandpa. I want to be able to, you know, show a lost boy how to get home. And between you know, between those moments and like the great animation of the city being like so perfectly unfamiliar from anything we've seen on the show up to this point, like we have no clue where Oscar is within the scope of this animated world, which is super cool. He has a literal save the cat sequence. I think there are a lot of great ingredients for a nice humanizing episode. And yeah, I liked this one a whole lot. And so, yeah, I don't know. Allegra, you said this was one of your favorites. I guess I'm curious what other episodes are sort of up there for you. If you're able to off the dome, provide like an Inner Circle Hall of Fame, Hey Arnold hierarchy, not to put you on the spot.
No, I can easily do this. So this is one of my favorites. I would say my absolute favorite is Helga on the Couch. Beautiful episode. It's such a unique episode. It's the full 22 minutes. It's the rare chance to see Helga diving into her backstory and her emotions and having this big breakthrough. And I love the character of her therapist in that episode. I love all the stories of why she loves Arnold and her, why she has this tension with her family. I mean, it's just, there's so much great character development in that episode that it was like, as a kid who wanted to be a writer, it was so inspiring to me of like, I want to write something like this. And then I also love the first Christmas special, the one with Mr. Wynn, finding his daughter. I mean, I cry every time. I'm sure we all do. That's a beautiful episode. And I think about that every Christmas. I like to rewatch it as well. And then I also love the first episode with Arnie, which is like, I feel like these are all representative of my different interests in this show, of like the sweet, heartfelt, kind of darker stuff, but then also the more absurd stuff. Like Oscar not being able to read as a grown man is a little absurd. Like the Beaver Queen stuff is a little absurd. And then Arnie is just peak weird, kind of disturbing, creepy. I think about him all the time, of how he loves reading nutritional facts and bubble gum. Like, he just has so many small details about him that I love so much. So I'd say these four are kind of my pantheon choices.
Nice. Yeah. The Mount Rushmore of I don't know.
Yeah.
I guess MySpace did have a top four option for a little while. Maybe that'd be the more preferable ranking system, but
I have four friends. So on MySpace, that was all I had, the top four.
Hey, well, you know what? Fair. And we can't go back and check the receipts because MySpace isn't a thing anymore, but I guess we'll have to take you at your word. So we'll roll with it. This is a nostalgia show. You do raise a really good point, though, that this is sort of an absurd premise. And like, it's one that I think the show handles with like a relatively good amount of like tact and decency, like in part because of how Arnold faces the situation. I mean, his name is in the title, and I think in like more so than in most episodes we've seen up to this point, especially like season three on, where Arnold is more of the, you know, he's not really like getting buckets, you know, he's doling out assists. He's like letting the moral message shine through other characters, and he's like, he's the facilitator in some various ways. And like Oscar being like, I confess, I can't read. And Arnold being like, that's okay, it's not a big deal, I'll teach you. There's no wrinkle. Like the only wrinkle was Oscar coming back a second time at probably like 3 a.m. and being like, okay, Arnold, but like, seriously, can you teach me how to read? And it was, I mean, him being the constant in that way, I guess I can't imagine what other routes they would have taken. I guess, I don't know, Emily, how did you have any feelings about Arnold one way or the other? Was it like a good, like, he was overwhelmingly positive. Did that feel like appropriate? Would you have wanted maybe more of an edge from him? How did that land for you?
Always could go with more of an edge with Arnold, I think. No, I really thought it was funny when, and now I'm thinking more about how Oscar gets to the place he does where he wants to self-actualize just because he wants to read, instead of when he initially does it, he's trying to win a bet against Ernie and Mr. Wynn. That's why I was thinking of when he goes, hey, little buddy, I was just wondering, as soon as Arnold was already talking to him about like, hey, I could teach you to read and like, I have all these lessons from school and blah, blah, blah. And so Oscar comes out from a place of like, oh yeah, I just want to win this bet. I want to prove these guys wrong that I live in the boarding house with, and then reaches the further end of it, which comes from kind of a sad, depressing place because he's reflecting on like being called a loser and the kid who's saying, hey, mister. but he wants to learn how to read for himself then. And that's why it's such a triumph. But I think, I don't know what to think about Arnold in this episode, I guess, as the assistant to teaching a grown man how to read. Maybe that's a little bit, I don't know what the word would be. Can't think of the word, but a kid teaching a grown man how to read, I'm not sure. But Arnold comes in with a strong assist. I don't know. What do you think of that, Allegra?
I mean, I think Arnold is always there to do the thing for the greater good. Like the fact that he was there for Helga in the previous episode to help her articulate her feelings about her mom. You know, he's always the person, the spiritual guide for whatever problem anyone has in Elwood City. And it's called Elwood City, right? Am I thinking of
Hillwood? I think there's an H floating around.
Oh my god.
There.
You know what Elwood City is? It's from Arthur.
Oh my gosh.
Wow.
They're that similar of city names. I didn't realize.
Very similar names. Honestly, wow. A little bit similar of shows. Yeah, a lot of similarities
both
there.
Weird shaped heads in both universes.
Weird shaped heads, Arthur, Arnold. Yo. There's a lot going on. Anyway, I'm sure in Elwood City, Arnold would come to everyone's aid as well. But yes, he definitely is always there for everybody. And it is weird that a 9-year-old is teaching a grown man to read. And also, the other thing, like, this is why I feel like it's absurd, is that Susie theoretically should have known. Like, how did she not say something by now? Like,
yeah.
I have so many questions about the Susie-Oscar relationship. I always thought it was so bizarre. I read on the fan wiki that apparently Oscar and Susie get divorced after the show ends. I don't know. I don't know if that's a spoiler. I don't really know the veracity. But there's a lot going on there. So Arnold being the savior here is just another nail in the coffin for that relationship for me.
That's a great point. I was thinking about how at the very beginning of the episode, she's like, oh, he just hums when he eats. Like, that's just a little idiosyncratic thing, but that's just a little trait of his. But you would think she'd know that he doesn't know how to read. Like, that's such a huge thing that he's been hiding. What's going on there?
So yeah, weird.
It's a doomed relationship. Such a tragic relationship that, and maybe, I guess, I don't know. I don't remember either of the Hey Arnold movies as well as I should. Maybe that plays into those backs. I don't know. Maybe, or maybe they don't. And it's, I don't know, something the internet came up with. Either way, Susie's probably better off. Not to, again, put my foot on the scale, but moving away from doomed tragic relationships, any other more positive lingering thoughts that y'all have about this episode? Shout outs you want to dole out, cats, anything that we want to put out there before we wrap this one up?
Freaking love that kitty. That cat is so cute. When he picks up the cat and carries it home, honestly, adorable. I love that moment.
They draw like the biggest eyes you could imagine on that cat too. The green eyes.
It's just a child book. Like, it is literally the kid's book cat.
Yeah. I was going to ask if y'all think the boarders end up keeping the kitty at the end, because it does go into Sunset Arms. It runs
so
in.
True. I mean, I don't feel like we ever see the kitty again. I don't care if we never see the kitty again. I believe they kept it because I don't want that cat going back on the street.
Right. Yeah. I mean, the cat didn't have a collar. And I couldn't help but again, like, extreme personal sensibilities. I mean, Jason's also on the talk. He and I share TikToks all the time. He knows what I'm talking about. There's definitely that flavor of like TikTok things where it's like, oh, I found this stray cat on the street and I'm just going to take it home and my life is is better than everyone else's because I just have this free cat. I couldn't help but feel that, like, Oscar stumbles upon the most perfect cat in existence. Just like, hey, buddy, you lost? Well, let's go home. It's so ridiculous. I would like to think that they kept the cat as well because, I mean, that cat chose Oscar at the end of the day. And that's the cat chose the borders. And as we all know, it's the chosen family that is what's most important, right? I don't know. I'm going to tiptoe away from like getting all sappy. Any other thoughts, shout outs, cats, you know, et cetera?
Well, not to totally derail us. Now I'm going to get Jason's nerves up, but by asking that. But I was wondering if anyone has stories of like getting lost in the city or navigating a big city like that, like Oscar.
I don't know if I've ever gotten lost in the city. The most lost I've ever gotten was, ironically, in the Czech Republic, Oscar's homeland. They have this like huge, it's like a national park kind of thing, but it's very, you know, there's no real trails. It's just very dense and large, and whatever signs they do have, which there are not many, are in Czech, which I do not speak, and Allegra can't read Czech. And I was walking around, and I was there by myself, just having a day, being in my feelings, and I was so lost. It took me like 4 hours to get out of there because I couldn't read any of the signs. Everything looked the same, and it took me finding some weird trail and running into two women who spoke English. Like, I could hear English voices and I followed those. And then they were like, oh, you're like right next to the road. And it's like, oh my God. It was very scary. So I feel like that's as close as I've come, but that part does resonate with me, at least to that extent.
Dang. That is a way more exciting story than mine. I'm not the most like geographically savvy person, Jason, Emily, and I are Minneapolis based. Emily and I went to the University of Minnesota, and when I started living in an apartment on the West Bank of the U's campus my junior year, I was still like kind of learning the bus lines, and one of my roommates asked if I would go because they were like making food or busy or something. It's just like, oh, go to the Aldi, pick up some potatoes. And so I took the bus to Aldi, grabbed some potatoes, took the bus back, and like the bus line we were on, or there was like construction along the route, so the stops were a little bit different, or like more than, you know, my visual memory was latching on to, of just like, oh, once I get to around this area, I get off. We zoomed past that area because construction was happening, and I was like, oh, well, it'll probably like stop soon. And then it just like kept going, took the highway, like went downtown, and eventually I just kind of cut my losses and hopped off. And I was like, I don't really know where I am. I know my apartment is in that general direction. This is an audio format, but I'm pointing just for the benefit of those listening. And so I walked like 45 minutes back to campus, or just outside of campus where my apartment was. My roommate did not ask me why I was so late with the potatoes. I just kind of threw them on the table and went about my evening, and then I found a cat. It was amazing. This cat just like walked up to me, and we adopted this picture perfect kitty, and nothing bad ever happened to anybody ever again. And that's my story. Thank you for asking that, Emily.
I'm so glad I asked, because those were such great stories. I have a quick story. It's just when I flew into New York City from Minneapolis, I was going to meet my friend in Brooklyn and stay with my friend there. And she gave me directions, but I was on the subway from LaGuardia or whatever, getting into Brooklyn. And of course my phone died when I was on the subway. So thank God I had like memorized the one stop, got off, and found the right Dunkin' Donuts that I was supposed to meet her at. And they even were so kind and let me like charge my phone. They took my phone in the back and let me charge it after I'm like frantically walking into the Dunkin' Donuts. It's just, I think this episode does such a good job of, writing that experience and that those feelings, like how stressful that feels when you're navigating and you just do not have any idea what's going on.
Oof, yeah. Losing the dead phone is so stressful. Like, that was not even something Oscar could have dealt with back then. He had no phone and no computer and no hope. But for us, it's like, oh, we're fine. We have phones. And then when your phone dies, it's like, okay, I will never be home. I will never get where I'm going. It's all over.
Yeah. But thankfully, much like Oscar navigating his way home, we did some great navigating, hit some really nice stops along the way on this episode during this discussion, metaphors. Yeah, I think that about does it. Allegra, thank you so much again for being here today. I guess if you wouldn't mind, the people are clamoring. They want to know where they can find you online. If there's anything that you want to plug, the space is yours to say whatever you please.
I would just say that was an amazing transition. yeah, just check out the Daily Beast, my work on there, the entire work of our team. We just launched a sort of subsection to the entertainment section on the Daily Beast called Obsessed. You can still find it on thedailybeast.com. Very easy to locate, but we have a lot of great, fun pop culture content. Just all the passionate, fiery takes you want. And, it's a lot of fun, good stuff on that. So very excited about it and would love everyone to go check out our work over on the Daily Beast Obsessed.
Nice. Will do. We'll add the appropriate things in the episode show notes, or Jason will, cause he's always really good at that. but thank you. Yeah. So thank you so much again. This was great. And thank you very much, dear listener, for listening to Stoop Kids, a Hey Arnold podcast. You can follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Stoop Kids Pod. And that's kids with a Z. This episode was produced by super producer Jason Daphnis, who you can find on Twitter at Nintendoofus. I've been Cody Narvison. You can find me on Twitter at Cody_BH.
And yeah, thank you so much, Allegra, for joining us. This was awesome to hear your thoughts. I've been Emily Suey. You can find me on Instagram at Emily Suey.
Oh, Maron. What a podcast.